This is KPFT Houston. Stay tuned for the Christmas Coup Comedy Players monthly Laughing Nightmare Special. This program was originally broadcast last Thursday on sister station WBAI in New York City.
Let the eagle soar like she's never soared before, from rocky coast to golden shore. Let the mighty eagle soar, soar with healing in her wings, as the land beneath her sings. Only God, no other kings. Let the mighty This country's far too young to die. She's still got a lot of only God, no other kings. Let the mighty eagle soar. Let me, though she's cried a bit for what we've put her through, she soared above the lifted lamp that guards sweet freedom's door. In the dews, the damps, the watchfires of a nation torn by war. Oh, she's far too young to die. You can see it in her eye. She's not yet begun to fly. It's time to let the mighty eagles.
Welcome to the Christmas Coup Comedy Players. That's a CCCP monthly Laughing Nightmare with David Dozer, John McDonough, Mark Kehoe, Muggy Klingman, Scooter, Caitlin and Raymond, Christopher Zaguris, John Sirius Almala, The Happy Tones, and me, Janet Coleman, and special guest Barry Crimmins of BarryCrimmins.com, Harry Shearer of Le Show, The Android Sisters, The Capitol Steps, and starring Randy Credico as the... Oh, come
Stop
on. Accept already the compliment of the presidents of...
Accept that compliment.
The compliments of the presidents of the United States. ChristopherZaguris.com.
You need a microphone to say that,
Christopher though. David took my microphone.
Yeah, that's right.
Christopher Zaguris of ChristopherZaguris.com.
That is it. And
he
also
thinks I need different mics for all my different personalities.
We're going to figure out which mic works.
You realize
we'll just
if I voted
through.
For Gore, he would have won?
We would have one hell of a show problem.
Yeah, really.
How good is your
That's
Gore,
really
man?
True,
my career is much better if I'm going to get back into it with Bush.
Yeah, we're all aware of that. That's a sort of sad commentary on the state
of good years of Reagan.
Political satire is up when...
Does that mean you're supporting Bush for re-election?
Well, my career is. I'm not.
I don't know. That'll get you burned around here.
Supporting it, huh?
Yeah, right. It will get you burned around
here. I don't know. I might be. There are a lot of people in that race. Hundreds and hundreds.
Hundreds of them, it seems, huh? Right. And almost as many as the people in California.
Yeah.
But those really are in the
hundreds. I support the pro-death penalty candidate, John Dean. No. Howard Dean.
Howard Dean. Yeah, he is. He's
John
not
Dean,
the,
Howard Dean, whatever.
Definitely not the perfect candidate. And you can't imitate him either, so
Well, he's not going to get that far.
No. Who do you think will be? Can you imitate
Sharpen.
Hillary?
I'll be sharper. A sharper will. I think my career will be better. I could do a lot better with Sharpen as president.
Before
as
November.
President, huh?
Before November, we'll all...
Jesse Jackson, he decided to get back in the race.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Anybody else in the crew?
You know, who knows?
Arianna Huffington would be good.
Well, we're supporting her for governor of California.
Me too.
Because she's been so good with the Tulia situation. She wrote
three
articles way back. Way back when it was unfashionable, back
who
in October
knew?
2000.
She really did a complete conversion, didn't she? She
Very
was
good.
Here in honor of Spencer Abraham. Let us begin.
Well, I've heard that other countries are down on the U.S., a land of mass consumption, our lives filled with excess. But my daddy wasn't fighting on Normandy that day for the right to drive a Hyundai
I refuse to live that way. And I'm proud to be an American who gets just 5 mpg. Though I live alone, the car I own can seat 103. And I'll gladly park so close to you, when you pull out you can't see. No, I'll never trade my Escalade. God bless my SUV. Well, the road may have congestion, but hey, I'll get there alive. So don't pester me with questions like, what would Gandhi drive? And you won't catch me in Starbucks if I need a drink or snack. When I bought this ship, she came equipped with a Starbucks in the back. And I'm proud to be an American with a car that fits my rear. The cash I put down could have fed a town in Somalia for a year. I'd gladly go and fight Saddam. He'd lose a war with me. You'll be stuck in mud when he sends his scud, but not my SUV. Woo!
It's September. It's almost the 11th. CCCP's Old Time Radio Theater takes you back to 2001, when horror was pulled from the jaws of terror. Enter the Bush Matrix.
Some government are hoping the threat will pass them by. They are mistaken. They lack the means to enforce their laws and control their borders. We are determined to exploit them, exacting brutality and oppression, and eventually consume them. Liberty is a disease. The civilization we share is threatened. Every nation in our coalition has duties. These duties can be demanding. Responsibility to crack down on parasites. I thank the Arab and Islamic countries that have killed all of the condemned terrorist traitors to Islam with indifference.
I know.
Freedom is a disease. Parasite nations trying to pick and choose their government as traitors face the most horrifying destruction. History will justify all the brutality and world holocaust. No hint of conscience would prevent it. In this nightmare world, there are good causes and bad causes. And we may disagree on where that line is drawn. We kill to overthrow governments and destabilize entire regions, perhaps in my country or perhaps in yours. The war against terror must inflame ethnic hatred, must serve as an excuse to persecute religious minorities in any country. Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories.
Morpheus.
Malicious lies. There is no such thing as no such government terrorist that can ever remember the deliberate murder of the innocent. If you know something, tell us. When we find you, you'll lie in a tomb of rubble. Not every nation will be a part in expanding global conspiracy of terror and chaos by their own hatred and extremism. Our enemies resent it and dismiss it, but the dreams of mankind are defined by coercion, subversion, the natural right to murder and to destabilize and to overthrow government and live in dignity.
After the Russians withdrew from Afghanistan in 1989, the Americans quickly lost interest in the country. In other words, we couldn't be bothered to finish the job or help out the actual people there. Okay, Soviet unions are gone, we kicked their ass, now you people can just starve to death, your waterworks are blown up, what do we care? Your dope's pretty good, though.
The people of Afghanistan will say with the rest of the world, good heroin. I can promise, too, that America will join the world in helping the people of Afghanistan rebuild their country. My country is pledged to encouraging development, investing in heroin, and expanding trade. I'm proud of the honorable conduct of the American military. 4 million in heroin from packages of rations and blankets. And all the world faces the most horrifying prospect of all. These same terrorists are searching for weapons of mass destruction, the tools to turn their hatred into Holocaust. They can be expected to use chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons the moment we deliver them.
This just in from the Christmas Coup Network newsroom, that's the CCNN, recently executed defrocked Presbyterian minister Paul Hill, who expressed confidence in becoming a martyr for his shotgun killing of a Pensacola, Florida abortion clinic doctor and his bodyguard in 1994, was reportedly surprised to be turned away at the pearly gates and remanded to hell with 19 Saudi Arabian hijackers who also thought they were going to paradise. And back in Washington, denying that the U.S. is not going it alone in Iraq, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld announced that Poland has already sent 1,000 troops to help screw in a light bulb.
That man is dangerous. That man is the most dangerous man in the world. That man is certifiable cuckoo. That man should be locked up. That man should be voted out. That man is the most dangerous man in the world. That man is
Saddam?
No. That man is
Osama.
No. That man is
Sharon.
No. That man is
the most dangerous man in the world.
That man will
bring about the holy wars.
Maybe. That man will
bring about the biblical prophecies.
Maybe. That man will
be the death of us all.
Maybe. That man is
the most dangerous man in the world.
You can protest
that man.
Protest all you want.
And you should.
How can you stop
that man?
You can't stop
that man.
Because
it's not just
that man.
From the great beyond.
We take you now live to the Oval Office, where Vice President Dick Cheney and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice are meeting with the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
I love my idea to create an Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing.
Well, it's a good idea, Mr. President.
Sometimes I even amaze myself, don't I, Dick?
Well, you are amazing, Mr. President.
Even though the usual Republican position is to abolish the Department of Commerce.
That's right. Well,
those are the old days, not anymore, County.
That's right.
Oh, yes, Mr. President.
And that's because in recent years, thousands of manufacturing jobs have been lost.
Hmm. Well, 2.5 million, actually, Mr. President.
We refer to that as thousands, Dick. Thousands.
Yeah, yes, Mr. President.
Thousands is sensible, Mr. President. Mm-hmm. Millions is hysterical, Dick.
Well, it happens to be accurate, Condi.
Accuracy is for sissies, Dick. Yeah. All right? Yeah. I think you're a sissy sometimes.
Yeah, well, sometimes.
It is our job to protect American people from the truth.
Yes, Mr. President. Mm.
Just like that 9/11 thing. Well, we told the EPA to say the air was cool, was okay.
Yeah.
I love New York.
You are right, Mr. President. Thousands of jobs were lost.
And there is nothing wrong with the air.
And my favorite, we are winning the war on terrorism.
I hate Republicans. I hate Republicans.
Regency Building in Newport Beach, California. It's an office-type structure that houses mainly financial and a few legal tenants. Let's bring you totally 100% up-to-date on this still bewildering and developing drama. A little more than 2 hours ago now, according to the very best information we have at the moment, Richard M. Nixon Jr. stepped into elevator number 3 in that building. He had been in the lobby at the time. We do know that. We do not know how long he'd been in the lobby. And as we've learned just in the last hour from computerized elevator records at that building, once inside the elevator, he pushed a button for floor number 12. What happened next, or perhaps we should say what didn't happen next, has come to rivet the attention of the nation and indeed much of the world. The doors of that elevator closed on Richard Nixon Jr., the reclusive, little-known son of the disgraced former president. And since that time, they have not opened again. Little RN, as he was known to the small, close-knit group of friends, and let me just check myself there, we should not be using the past tense because as we try Sprinter hard to remind you, there's every chance that he's going to walk out of that elevator any minute. But little RN has been, as far as we know up to now, swallowed up by that 4x8-foot chamber. Trapped, according to what the Newport Beach Fire Department told R. Bill Whitaker, between the 9th and 10th floors. Now, the question has come up since we've been on the air with this story. Don't most modern elevators have escape doors, some kind of trap door, usually found in the ceiling? We've been more determined than a schnauzer in a tornado trying to get an answer to that question, according to the Otis Elevator Corporation spokeswoman, who called us up on the air just moments ago before the break. The particular model in question does not have such an emergency exit, and she went on to say, and I'm quoting here, that Baba Booey and Howard Stern are also trapped in that elevator with Richard Nixon Jr., and that they're spanking him. Unquote. Now, whether or not there's more than one person in there, we cannot stone cold, rock solid, slam dunk confirm to you at this time. But rest assured, and know this please, that we're going to be hungry coyote determined to nail this information down. Now, I've just been told that two other networks have reported the same information from the same source. So we're going to say for now that that story is harder than a diva's fingernails. Now, to recap what else we know, Richard Nixon Jr. had not taken food. He'd taken no water, no other emergency supplies with him into that elevator. There has been no contact with him by the emergency telephone, which is believed to be in that elevator. Personnel from the Newport Beach Fire Department are in the Regency Building. They're attempting to gain access to elevator shaft number 3. So far, they have not, repeat, not been successful. And there are precious few hours of daylight left in that seaside community. So recently preparing to enjoy a summer Sunday, but now plunged into what we, 3,000 miles away, can only describe as a state of disbelief mingled with a mixture of fear and numbness. Historian Douglas Brinkley joins us here for a moment. Doug, check me on this perception. There's a sense here of how much more can happen to the Nixon family, isn't there?
Well, Dan, you don't like to say there's such a thing as a Nixon curse, and as a historian, of course, I don't believe in curses.
Do you believe in spells?
Not really.
Well, what about hexes?
No, none of that.
All right, go ahead.
But yes, the father, Richard Nixon Sr., was almost impeached. He became the first and only president to resign.
Excuse me, Doug, we're looking at footage of the resignation speech at the moment, Doug, and it does feel as if all those painful memories just come pouring back as we think about a son we didn't even know existed until about noon New York time today,
yeah.
Trapped in that wood-paneled hell.
Well, the mother died, the father died, mm-hmm. Only the two daughters, Julie and Tricia, remain alive, and as far as we know, neither of them is on speaking terms with Richard Nixon Jr., So yes, it is too early to call it a tragedy, but by the same token, clearly it's too late to call it a comedy. Dan?
Doug Brinkley, thanks. Just in the 10 minutes since we first showed a live picture of the Orange County condominium building where Richard Nixon Jr. lived, a crowd has begun to gather in front of that building. And if we can go back to that shot for a moment, yes, we can see there's some homemade signs. One I can read from here says, "You were not a crook." Another that reads, "Bring us together again for the first time." Some very deep emotions being brought back to the surface by this drama in a box, as we're calling it. Dr. Milton Fishbein is an internist at Beth Israel Hospital here in New York City. He came out of a pre-surgical consultation, as I understand it, to spend a couple minutes with us here. Dr. Fishbein.
Yes, I'm looking at the monitor, Dan. The Chiron should be spelled B-E-I-N, not B-I-N-E. But yes, Dan.
Well, we will catch that on the next go-round, Doctor. That's as sure as peaches in August.
Good.
Dr. Fishbein, how long can a reasonably healthy person survive in the situation that apparently confronts Richard Nixon Jr. on this increasingly somber afternoon?
Well, Dan, assuming the power is out to the elevator but not to the ventilation system, there wouldn't be an oxygen problem. And a normal adult individual could withstand a prolonged period of food deprivation. Now, water deprivation, you'd begin to see the signs of dehydration after about the second day.
So that would put it at about midday Tuesday.
Uh-huh. More troublesome, of course, would be the hygiene situation, which I'm not sure you want me to go into on the air.
Well, we all appreciate your sensitivity, Dr. Fishbein, but I think our viewers need to have some sense of the peril that Richard Nixon Jr. may well be in if rescue isn't imminent.
Well, assuming that he's not like his father, his late father, and that he just holds it in, within a very few hours, there's going to be an extremely dangerous situation in there.
Even in that enclosed space.
Mm-hmm. Especially. Dan, we could be talking about a little Calcutta in there before daybreak.
Dr. Milton Fishbein, thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Should I come back after the surgery?
Yes, if you would, please. In his landmark opera, Nixon in China, composer Philip Glass set music to these words. "I've come to the Great Wall, but there's a great wall always with me. I open the door to a great nation and close the door to myself." Today in Newport Beach, California, Richard Nixon's only son must be wishing that someone can open that door to himself before it's too late. Stay with CBS. We're going to be on this story like flies on a picnic. And your local CBS station is trying harder than concrete right now to find people in your area who know or knew Richard Nixon Jr. So you stay with us, please.
I am just a rich boy, and my papa's getting old. So I took his job in D.C., for a chance to rule the world and make big money too. I told some lies, cause I tell them what they want to hear, like that big Iraqi lie. Yes, I lie. Lie, lie, lie. Yeah, I'm always telling lies. Lie, lie, lie. In the White House, we are always telling lies. Asking for $100 billion, I come looking for a war, but I get no offers. Till I start to make up stories that just aren't true. I do declare that my nose just keeps growing. If you'd only look right there, I'm telling lies. line of lies. Yeah, we're always telling lies, line of lies. About the White House, we are always telling lies. Now I'm sending out my armies and they're blowing up Iraq. I want the oil so my Halliburton friends can get the drilling rights. Ultra right, that's me. Now in the clearing stands your president. He's always telling lies, and he carries the reminder of every little war where we have killed folks. And we cry out in our anger and our shame. No more wars, no more lies, but the liars still remain. Lie, lie, lie. Yeah, they're always telling lies. Lie, lie, lie. Yeah, they're always telling lies. Lie, lie, lie. Yes, at the White House, it's all lies. Lie, lie, lie. At the White House, they are always telling lies.
Rest that man. From the great beyond.
We take you now live to the Oval Office where Vice President Dick Cheney and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice are meeting with the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Guys, you know, I have decided to let Secretary of State Colin Powell go back to the United Nations to trick them into supplying troops for the mopping up operations in Iraq. Did I say that okay?
Yes, yes, Mr. President.
Say that again. Mopping up operations in Iraq.
That's excellent. Right.
It means kill the people that are still out there.
Kill them with mops.
30 million people don't like us.
Clean up, clean up.
Yes. Let a bunch of foreigners get killed instead of our brave men and women.
Well, that's a good idea, Mr. President.
And the press doesn't care when foreigners get killed.
It's not page one.
No.
Not our press.
No.
It's like when they have one of those big typhoons in Bangladesh. It's on by the classified ad section.
Page nine.
Who cares?
Yes.
No one.
And those foreigners wearing those blue helmets will be under our command.
Yes. And
give me
you,
another line.
Well, you will still be the boss, Mr. President.
Oh, yeah.
In our helmets, will be sand colored. Mm-hmm. Sand. Color sand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll be green.
Sometimes right?
green.
And they'll have camouflage.
Uh-huh.
Camouflage.
Yes.
You guys know what that is?
Yes.
Camouflage?
Yes.
All right?
Disguise.
This way, when somebody gets shot, it'll be somebody wearing a blue helmet.
Yeah. Screw the United Nations, Mr. President.
No one can blame you, Mr. President, if someone wearing a blue helmet gets shot.
I came up with that idea with a line of blow and some pretzels.
Really?
Wearing a blue helmet is so stupid.
Well, it is stupid, Mr. President.
It's completely stupid, Mr. President.
It's so easy to see.
Oh, it's way too easy.
Nothing
too
could easy. Be easier. No, blue right. helmet.
The only place, guys, fight, a little sip of that. Only way, place to fight a war wearing a blue helmet would be a place with blue trees, right?
Yeah.
Blue sand and blue people.
That's right.
I wonder where that could be.
Well, it probably doesn't exist.
I don't know if it does or doesn't, Dick.
No.
I don't know if it does or doesn't, okay?
Yeah.
Guys, listening, follow me?
Yeah.
But I bet I could find it if I had a yellow submarine and about a kilo of some good blow.
I hate Republicans. I hate Republicans. Baby, I can't.
Hi, Barry Crimmins here, www.barrycrimmins.com. Before we begin the fall offensive that will kick off the final 16 months of George W. Bush's term of stolen office, let's take a moment and assess his current political circumstances. Bush is counting on his assault on Iraq and his continued cynical exploitation of the 9/11 attacks to become the first president to serve two full terms while winning only one election. I don't like his chances, but I love ours. Let's start by considering Iraq, which is more than W, his advisors, and the lapdog corporate media did last winter. Bush lied, cajoled, bullied and bribed his way into a conflict that he believed would guarantee his place in history. It has. The court-appointed president will be remembered as an idiot for generations to come. Leave it to Bush to stage a quagmire in a desert. This effort has required a few Great Lakes worth of bottled water, no doubt provided by Halliburton at retail rates marked up so high that they are also billing us for automatic pricing guns. The billions that soak into that desert come from the same working people whose soldiers, sons, and daughters are learning firsthand why the battle emblem for the occupation of Iraq should be the sitting duck. The funds W's corporate cronies siphon off from this endeavor deprive those tens of thousands of soldiers, not to mention millions of Iraqis, of many basic human needs. Needs that any nation truly intent upon restoring human rights would have made a number one priorities. Unfortunately, W's only priority was to start a war. Junior actually believed that pulling into a few cities and occupying them meant that victory was his. But wars are never as simple as the morons that start them. He told us he was going to rid the world of terrorists, but his Iraq initiative has only united, strengthened, and emboldened all things Al-Qaeda. His military action and occupation have failed so spectacularly that even some of Saddam Hussein's worst enemies pine for him as if he were a lost sweetheart from a gentler age. Nothing highlights Bush's ethical and political depravity more than his ridiculous flight to the aircraft carrier Abraham Lincoln in early May. Puppeteer-in-chief Karl Rove was sure that this multi-million-dollar photo op would provide inordinately valuable propaganda footage for the campaign of 04. And it does. We now have explicit footage of Bush, a military deserter during Vietnam, in drag as a war hero. Even worse, he stood under a giant banner that announced, "Mission accomplished." Despite his triumphant declaration, American losses have continued unabated and U.S. casualties are now more than double what they were the day Bush became a boat act. Anyone possessed of a modicum of political literacy knows that Iraq had nothing to do with the 9/11 assaults. Nevertheless, Bush will go to New York City for the Republican 2004 convention and offer the thousands of dead victimized by his mad dash to violence as proof of retribution for the carnage at the World Trade Center. New Yorkers suffered greatly on and since 9/11. They hold the terrorists accountable for what they did, and George W. Bush accountable for what he didn't do and hasn't done and even might have done. And we all remember that Bush was on a month-long vacation as the final planning for the terrorist assaults took place. We'd have been in better shape had he simply stayed on vacation. His performance on that fatal day was dismal at best. As the Northeast burned, this would-be cowboy tough guy made like Barney Fife and headed for Nebraska, via Louisiana. The next day, while thousands lay beneath the rubble, his staff's first order of business was to disseminate a whopper about fictional threats made against Bush. That was just the first of hundreds of instances in which the Bush regime has used this tragedy for venal political gain. The following year, when W's pre-9/11 negligence was finally receiving some scrutiny, his minions began flashing a multicolored strobe light of warnings about new terrorist threats. Most of these fictional threats suggested that New York was again the prime target. Bush's only regret over re-traumatizing millions of New Yorkers came because he forced the city's already overburdened emergency service workers into putting in extra hours before he could find a way to screw them out of overtime pay. Recently, when NYC was plunged into Baghdadian darkness, whispers suggested terrorism was to blame. They were right. It was the economic terrorists of a deregulated energy racket that caused the August blackout. Terrorists in lockstep with Bush's plan to bleed this nation so dry that it will never again be able to afford the type of social safety net necessary to make sure vibrant cities like New York aren't just good places to live for penthouse dwellers. And now we learn that Bush even disregarded the ultra-wealthy when his EPA lied to all New Yorkers about the noxious quality of post-9/11 air. One year from now, the court-appointed prez will be at his Republican garden party. It will only serve to remind this nation of a day so desperate that most Americans felt they had no choice but to trust George W. Bush. He has defiled that trust in every conceivable manner. New Yorkers won't care if Bush shows up to give his acceptance speech at Ground Zero on a hook and ladder dressed in complete firefighter regalia. They will be out in full force on their streets to let the Republicans know that although their city readily welcomes the tired, the poor, the huddled masses yearning to breathe free and clean air, the city that still puts out the welcome map for wretched refuse, draws the line when it comes to inviting riffraff like George W. Bush to town. Mark my words, before next year's gluttonous old party confab ends, New York will make Republicans wish that they had followed W.'s 9/11 example and headed for Nebraska, even if it meant laying over in Louisiana. Have a wonderful autumn. This is Barry Crimmins.
Okay, that was Barry Crimmins. Barry Crimmins, very funny guy. He and I worked together many times. Actually, in Nicaragua, we did a show down there with a couple other comics. And we did a few things in 1988 and in 1990 with William Kuntzler, when Kuntzler did comedy. Three different times I know he did comedy. This one here is from Caroline's, August 13, 1995. And he's talking about, we go right in the middle of a story from the Chicago 8 trial here, and talking about the mail he was getting, and we go into the middle of that, talking about mail.
So every day the envelopes came in. Address, Jerry Rubin, Abby Hoffman, or Judge Hoffman, care of the United States Marshal Service, Federal Building, Chicago, Illinois. And we'd open them. And we had all sorts of kind of questions going on. What part of the body was this from? Male or female? And so on. I opened one of my envelopes one day, and instead of hair, there was a noxious substance, green sort of vegetative material, which my practice knows to recognize as cannabis, or marijuana, to put it in the vernacular, forbidden by 18 U.S.C. 541 D.A.3. So I said to Jerry and Abby, for Christ's sake, we're surrounded by FBI agents, the judge, marshals, clerks, the press is sitting all over the place. What should we do with this grass? They said, throw a copy of the Chicago Tribune over it, and no one will notice. So I did that. And I sweated it out until 5 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, I said, boys, let's get our asses out of this courtroom. Jerry said, what about the grass? I said, what do you mean, what about the grass? Leave it here. Maybe the cleaning people will get it, or the marshals will find it and pin it on someone else. I'll take the envelope so there'll be no fingerprints. They said, bullshit. Make a motion, they said. Get that grass. We're not going to leave good cannabis in the United States courthouse. I said, boy, you're asking me to do a heavy thing. I'm 51 years old. I've never spent a lot of time in jail for drugs yet. They said, get a motion. Get on your feet. So I got up and I said, Judge Hoffman, courtesy of your marshal service, there's been deposited on our table a supply of cannabis forbidden by 18 U.S.C. 541 D.32. I asked, what should we do with it? The judge peered down at me and said, well, you're a resourceful lawyer, Mr. Kunstler. I'm sure you'll know how to dispose of it. I said, Your Honor, it will be burnt tonight.
That's it. Wow. You actually can get that as a premium here, that entire 45 minutes, and it comes along with Urban Corey and some great footage of him doing a wonderful Sidney Greenstreet. But we continue with the Kuntzler voice, and we take you now live to the Oval Office with Vice President Dick Cheney and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice are arriving for a meeting with the President of the United States, George W. Bush. Condi. Dick.
Mr. President, where did all these dogs come from?
Dogs. I'm a little surprised. to see so many dogs, yeah. And they're all so quiet. I don't understand.
Yeah. Very, very well-behaved little doggies, yes. There they go. Just like a dog. Barking like a dog.
Well, who let all those dogs out?
Yeah.
Aren't you supposed to ask me that, Dick?
I was wondering where the dogs
The other day
from.
I dropped the dog.
Ah, yes, oh, yeah. Mr. President, you dropped a dog.
This
yes,
was your dog, Barney, Mr. President.
I dropped him.
Yeah.
I dropped Barney, my dog.
Yeah.
And I love Barney.
Well, of course.
You do,
I love
yes.
my dog.
It was an accident, Mr. President.
No one blames you for that, Mr. President.
No one blames me, Dick, but I also don't get any credit for it.
Credit for dropping your dog, Mr. President?
What if I had dropped Barney on purpose, Conti?
Oh, that'd be a good idea, Mr. President.
Why would you drop Barney on purpose, Mr. President?
To demonstrate that I'm willing to drop everything, including my dog Barney, to wage my war against Saddam Hassan and Osama bin Laden and whoever.
Mm. That's a good idea, Mr. President. That's
drop right. your dog, yeah. fight terrorism. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad you guys get my idea, man. You know? Now pick up a dog.
Yes, Mr. President. Which dog would you like me to pick up?
Just pick up a dog, yeah. All right? Pick up a dog, Dick.
All right, I'll take the little chihuahua. I've got a bad heart. I can't pick up a heavy dog, Mr. President.
Pick up the St. Bernard, Dick.
Yes, Mr. President.
Dick.
Okay.
Your dog has a cask of brandy around his neck, Dick.
Well, he's a St. Bernard, isn't he?
Just make sure it isn't French brandy, Dick, all right?
Yes,
I'll
President.
Get the Great Dane, Mr. President.
Okay. That's not necessary, County, by the way. I know you can do it, all right?
Thank you, Mr. President.
Now pick up the Chihuahua.
Oh,
the Chihuahua.
Yes, Mr. President.
That's a Mexican dog from somewhere in Mexico.
It
¿Cómo estás, amigos míos?
From Chihuahua, Mr. President, the province just south of El Paso.
Chihuahua, Mexico.
Yes.
Yeah, see, I went there many times and got loco en la cabeza con la bloco. Bloco la grino.
Of course so, Mr. President.
Mr. President, this dog's a little heavy.
Well, our war on terrorism is heavy, Dick.
Yes, Mr. President.
Hey.
I'm holding the dog here. It's heavy.
It's a heavy commitment to fight an endless war against evil villains who hate freedom, Dick.
I have the commitment, Mr. President.
You have the Chihuahua.
Well.
Yeah, you have the longest line coming up, Dick. I wish it were I.
Well,
let us now go forth with you guys carrying your dogs for all to see throughout the streets of our nation's capital.
Yes.
We'll go over to the Lincoln Memorial, and you can drop your dogs right on the spot where Martin Luther King made his famous speech where he complained about some check he didn't receive.
Well, I have a dream speech, Mr. President.
I remember his where's the check speech as far as I'm concerned, kids.
Yeah, sure, Mr. President.
Hey, what's happening here? What's happening here?
It looks like the Vice President has fainted again, Mr. President.
No? That's okay as long as the St. Bernard is all right.
I hate Republicans.
You've been listening to the Christmas Coup Comedy Players. That's a CCCP, our monthly laughing nightmare with David Dozer, John McDonough, Mark Kehoe, Moogie Klingman, Scooter, Caitlin and Raymond, Christopher Zaguris, John Sirius Almella, The Happy Tones, and me, Janet Coleman, and special guests Barry Crimmins of BarryCrimmins.com, Harry Shearer of La Show, The Android Sisters, The Capital Steps, and starring Randy Credico.
There's only three people in this room.
The President of the United States, and very much thanks to Matthew Finch.
And William Kunstler, Jr. You have been listening to the Christmas Coup Comedy Players Monthly Laughing Nightmare Special, which aired last Thursday on sister station WBAI New York. This is KPFT Houston, and the CCCP will be back next month. On to other things. If you've been tuned in regularly to KPFT lately, you've heard a lot about elections of local board members by you, the listener, just on the horizon. And if you've been tuned into KPFT for the past year and a half, you've been hearing about elections on the horizon the whole time. So what's up with that? Who's stalling? Well, this afternoon, the interim Pacifica National Board will be meeting via conference call. And that conference call will be broadcast on these airways. in just a little over an hour from now. So at the top of the hour, we'll be going to David Dye and World Blase. Then at 2 o'clock, you'll be able to hear for yourself who's sandbagging and why this promise of listener elections has been so hard to keep. So I urge everyone with an interest in the future of this network and this station to tune in. For our first opinion on this state of affairs, let's go back to the airwaves of WBAI and listen to some of what 25-year veteran programmer Mike Fader had to say on the air just this past Sunday.
There are as many opportunists and dictators and would-be emperors and empresses in our organization as there are in any other organization. I mean, unions have to deal with this stuff all the time. Everybody who's ever been in a union understands that unions can be rough places, even violent, dangerous places, and there are people who want to run them, and not always for the good of the rank and file. So, in other words, the left is no more immune to this than your classic, you know, kings or right-wing dictatorship. Now, union people and people at BAI, you hear this all the time, all say brother and sister or brothers and sisters. At this point, I would say vast experience in left-wing organizations, people who say brothers and sisters rarely mean it. And they say brothers and sisters, they are the big brother. They are the big sister, the people who want to run things. There is, and we all know this, no organization, no matter how small, even a family unit, which is truly a democracy. The basic unit, the family, of any civilization anywhere at any time in history is not a democracy. And we grow with this in our blood and bones. So, in fact, to have utter equality in any kind of business or group or even a place like, and I keep referring to a place like BAI or any kind of a left-wing organization or union, which is supposedly based on utter equality. Now, you've all read Orwell, The Animal Farm. You see what happens. There are people who will always try to take other people over, who will tell other people what to do, who even believe it's for their own good. And we have, for instance, we have somebody who is a very active and aggressive person behind the scenes here in the Pacifica Foundation, who is at WBAI, a person who has a radio show here, who is also an extremely active political force at BAI, who, to any clear, neutral observer, clearly wants, and constantly uses all the phrases of equality, all the catchwords and buzzwords of equality, has no interest. She has utter contempt for the average person, this person. And she has no interest in democracy, equality, or anything else. She'll tell you what to do. You shut up. And if you say one word, it's off with your head.
For example,
I'd like to have my agenda.
Well, actually, you didn't. But you're not the chair, and you're not the chair. You're not the chair.
Chair.
By the way, Joy, would you please?
Chair.
Can we respect the chair, please?
Ray.
You're not the chair.
We're
trying to set an agenda.
And I wanted to apologize to Mimi for not allowing her to abuse the time and take as much as she wants. I'm sorry for that. I won't do it again.
Well, if I may, just a point of clarification, unless you have a floating quota for a floating quorum, sorry.
The...
Excuse me, just one clarification. I would not have voted one way or the other on it. Agenda items. I'm not trying to chauvinize you or anything else.
Absolutely not.
Willie,
you were not recognized by Ray.
So who is recognized around here?
Myself and Sheila. So I'm sorry, please bear with us.
If you enforce it, Ray, because you are the chair. You are on a paid Pacifica phone conversation now. So you end it and you hang up.
And if you say one word, it's off with your head.
It's not a great complex issue how to do it, Ray.
No, it's not a great complex issue at all. I thought we had just exchanged a few ideas before we hung up.
Ray, it is inappropriate.
We have as many people clearly and typically in our organization, which struggles for the ideal here at BAI, which often has programs dedicated to the rights, and should be, of course, to the rights of oppressed minorities, to oppressed people all over the place. We have our fair share, even our larger than fair share, of nascent and outright dictators and oppressors. And they're in every group, so there's nothing special about BAI. Everybody's got somebody who wants to do this. Clearly, you have to have leaders. It is human nature that most of us just want to lead our lives in a simple way, but someone has got to be in charge of a family, a ship, a union, a radio station, you know, an organization, something, you know, a protest march. Someone's got to be in charge. Someone's got to run this stuff. Well, you have to hope it's for the benevolence and the good of the greater mass of people and not for their own sake. And how many Gandhis are there in the world? And how many petty little tin-pot dictators and commissars are there? It's quite a difference. It's quite a difference.
Quite a difference. We're beginning to get the idea, I think. That was Mike Fader, veteran programmer on the air at WBAI. He is also an author whose latest book is available on Amazon.com, and it's called The Talking Cure. The Talking Cure. Okay, we're in the studio with Clay Smith, a longtime listener and a local musician, and myself, Scooter, to talk about why it's so hard to evolve a democratic structure from an organization that is, for the most part, unaccountable at this point. We also have with us one of our more controversial local unelected officials with us in the studio, who will introduce himself, because I didn't really catch your name.
My name? Why would I tell you my name?
It just makes it makes it easier.
I don't want anybody holding me accountable for anything. You can just refer to me as BART.
You mean like Bay Area Rapid Transit?
Yes, yes, that's right. The San Francisco subway. I see you catch on quickly.
Okay.
You're a very clever young man.
And who invited you to this party?
I hope you weren't planning on talking about buffalo meat on sale at Whole Foods, were you?
No, that's the vegan program.
Oh, really? How did you get on the board?
Because we don't want to offend anyone, you know.
I wouldn't think of it.
You know that the consumption of buffalo is a time-honored American tradition.
No, we're here to talk about the evolution toward elections.
I don't think Bart wants to talk about elections here.
Yes, it was the consumption of buffalo that led to massive real estate development, you know.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. Are you sure you're from Pacifica?
Oh, yes.
Surely, with your extensive background in journalism, you understand how a democratic community could work.
Well, Mr. Smith.
Excuse me?
Before you go to Washington, with your egalitarian, left-wing, ideological fluff, let me ask you one question.
Are you talking to me?
Do you think it's ethical to implement such a grandiose, network-wide media democracy while the San Francisco subway is threatened by a virtual stampede by herds of excess buffalo? Apparently you haven't been paying attention! Nor are you willing to accept responsibility for the apocalyptic ramifications of free speech gone wild. Faced with a potential plague of Bay Area bison, all you're worried about is your squalid little vote. How humanitarian is that, Mr. Smith? Now, if you'll excuse me, I think I'll go freshen my drink.
We really need these elections.
Yeah, so long as it's not used as a way to avoid elections. No. I think we need to proceed with elections and do this.
David,
at the same time.
We need a commentary.
Okay. No, you got to listen to all I got to say. You can get off the line. That's all right.
Okay. I'm not getting off.
Okay.
Next.
David, are you done, David?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was an excerpt from the last interim Pacifica National Board conference call. And by the way, the reason I thought it appropriate to bring this subject to your attention is because in a little more than an hour from now, this station will be broadcasting another interim Pacifica National Board conference stall. I mean call. And this stuff is not that dry. You need to listen to this power struggle, because Until it's ironed out, you are not part of the struggle. You are not empowered. And believe me, all sorts of weird things could happen. Anyway, the exasperated voice you heard was that of Los Angeles board member, a gentleman by the name of Dave Fertig, being interrupted by Marion Barry. As if things weren't weird enough, yeah. Marion Barry is a member of the Pacifica National Board. Due to a compromise that had to be made with the hijackers of Hijacker is now an impolitic reference. He's one of the former tenants of the Pacifica Hotel. Anyway, speaking of former tenants, here's some more audio from last week's conference call. Thanks to the KPFT News Department, who contributed, in part, to this unauthorized mix.
Last night, the interim Pacifica National Board met for the purpose of voting on a timetable for station elections. A motion authored by Carol Spooner was defeated by a 6-5 vote.
Okay, so I'm going to do this in alphabetical order, Lisa?
Yes.
George Barnstone.
No.
Marion Barry.
No.
From Washington, D.C.
Pete Frampton.
Yes.
James Ferguson.
From Washington, D.C.
No.
David Fertig.
Yes.
Ray LaForest.
No.
Rob Robinson.
From Washington, D.C.
No.
Carol Spooner.
Yes.
Jabari Zakiya.
From Washington, D.C.
No.
And myself, I'll vote yes.
The motion defeated.
Right, the motion defeated.
The voice of Marion Barry.
The motion had called for nomination of delegates to open on September 10th and close on November 10th. Although KPFT's local advisory board had voted overwhelmingly in favor of Draft B, local area board representative
George Barnstone.
No.
Representative to the IPMB George Barnstone.
No.
George Barnstone.
George Barnstone.
No.
Voted against setting a timetable for elections.
George Barnstone.
No.
Voted against setting a timetable for elections. And Newstime Barnstone was unavailable for comment.
George Barnstone.
No.
Marion Barry.
No.
George Barnstone.
No. The motion defeated.
Right, the motion defeated.
Station elections.
No.
No.
No. No. No.
George Barnstone.
No. No. No.
Elections.
George Barnstone.
No. No. No.
Elections.
No.
George Barnstone.
No. I've got a question for you, Leslie.
Okay, and then we really would like to wrap up today's meeting.
Let me ask you my question.
Yes, please, George.
That is, so what did not pass today? What was the motion?
Carol's motion. The
motion to set an elections timetable did not pass.
Right, the seven-point motion from with a time frame for the election did not pass.
Motion defeated.
Right, motion defeated.
Station elections.
No.
No.
No. No. No.
George Barnstone.
No. No. No.
Elections.
George Barnstone.
No. No. No.
Elections.
No. So what did not pass today? What was the motion?
All right. Now, the first question you're asking yourself is why our local representative to the interim Pacifica National Board voted on a motion of which he was ignorant. I couldn't begin to guess, but I received an email from a listener who has stated, quote, "Our local IPNB representative has consistently aligned himself with the former tenants of Pacifica Hotel and will always put his personal political aspirations ahead of the listeners and staff of KPFT, which he considers little more than Texas dirt. Don't hold your breath. He votes with D.C. He's a political climber." Unquote, Miss Joan Edston. Well, there you have it, fellow dirt.
You can't put that on the air. Who gave you permission to put this on the air? There are limits to free speech. How dare you question authority?
Sold out to D.C. again. Well, what else is new?
You're nothing but a low-life mic jockey.
Hang in there.
You can be replaced.
Pay attention.
I'll never be replaced. You can't vote me out.
We will democratize this network.
No, you won't. And this is the last time you'll be on the air. Mark my words.
We will survive. Maybe so.
the powers that be.
Pay attention. Get involved.
They'll never be.
And raise hell. Look, trust me, we'll do it. We'll pull it off. Come on. Keep the faith. Keep the love. KPFT, Houston.